seachtain an Indo-Ascaliger.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach an seo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir in reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus go mina fnacht gáir a chlig sár ducha sin éair. Ná ní bhíon ann tar d'oraach sé sin. Vin Marav.
Shachtan. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
On this week's Big Tech Show, when will cars safely drive themselves on our streets? And who in Ireland is providing the technology to help them do that? We talk to one of the country's biggest automotive autonomy entrepreneurs.
I have BMW Drive Assist in my own vehicle, and it is much, much safer because we are all prone to distraction, especially when we're on the motorway from Limerick to Dublin, for example. We've all been there where you actually forgot a whole section of the road. So I would say if you take it from a safety perspective, and it does allow you to kind of relax.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
They were O'Driscoll, Horgan, extra man is Fitzgerald. Oh, Fitzgerald is cutting back inside! Leicester have another! Darcy O'Driscoll through the legs, Rob Carney out to Fitzgerald again, step and score!
Hello and welcome to the Left Wing Independent.ie's rugby podcast. I'm Will Slattery, delighted to be joined in studio after a historic weekend by Luke Fitzgerald. Luke, hello.
William, just got the voice back, thank God, just in time for the pod. Some weekend.
I think Brent Pope summed up it best when I read in his column on Monday that he said, sometimes as a pundit, you just have to eat some humble pie. I think that's particularly relevant given who I'm sitting across after your prediction. He said 14 points, two tries. Then you held back and said, actually, 15 points. You really made turn the screw with the extra 1 point. You felt that there would be an even bigger hiding that they'd actually get. So
yeah.
An apology first, I think, is in order for the Irish rugby
public. You won't be getting one. I absolutely hate doing those things. But yeah, I thought they beat us well. I thought, it's the first time I've ever seen. Like, they could have lost to England the week before as well. I mean, that was a really tight one. If they had taken one of those kicks... And you could even argue obviously he was clearly offside and he was never onside, Courtney Laws, but it was amazing. Presumably the gap is closed. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe they're tired. Don't know what it is. But there was no real reaction. I thought Ireland were brilliant. I thought they kind of suffocated them. They looked better. Maybe when you think about it, when I was watching the game, so we started off, we got a great first half, and I was kind of thinking, Jesus, actually, that was... Like, they never really looked like troubling us, you know? And we looked like we had the athletes to actually kind of contain them. You know, we were competing really well in the physical exchanges. And I was kind of thinking, actually, when you think about our front row and how good it is, how good are Cian Healy and Tadhg Furlong? How Tadhg Furlong isn't in...
I was going to say, you never thought you'd see a day where the Irish scrum would be mincing the All Blacks scrum.
I used to always do it, but because they never... They just used to get the thing out. Surviving there, get out, was a small part of the game for them. But, I mean, I've got to say, I just think the two lads are just... And then you have Porter and Jack McGrath coming on. Kilcoyne can't even get in.
The whole pack.
Everyone played well. Mm. There's no one on the team that didn't play well. But if you think about the tight exchanges and, where most of our... a lot of our good carries were by our front five. They were. If you think about, when we got momentum, Tadhg Furlong and Cian Healy were just out... They're outstanding.
And the man we'll have on in a few minutes, James Ryan.
He's just a stat machine, isn't he?
Do I tip to have an unbelievable game on the podcast last
week? You did, fair play. But have you seen him have a bad game?
No, but I just feel I didn't get the backing from my co-host that my point deserved.
Do you know what it was? I thought those guys, I thought what Whitelock and Retallick would get the better of them based on experience. Because I think Retallick is an unbelievable rugby player as well. That partnership, are they the most capped now ahead
for
of
All Blacks.
Back East and...
Yeah. No, I did the
they're still behind
rugby?
Back East and Matfield.
It was definitely the most capped in All Blacks history anyway.
Pretty impressive duo, to be fair. So that was probably a reflection of that. I thought they might have the edge there. And I thought the front row might be a little bit tighter than it was. We looked we were way better. We were better. Defensively, even at the end when Luke McGrath kicked that one away...
They just had to make it interesting at the end.
Yeah, but they didn't look like scoring. You know, they got pressure and they got down the pitch, but they didn't look like scoring, you know. So it was an unbelievable performance. We were just buzzing. I was sitting with Kev McLaughlin and Mike McCarthy, and we were just, all of us were roaring. Like, it was all, honestly, I haven't been that excited watching again. And like, rugby doesn't affect me. Like, it doesn't
do it for you.
Obviously I love it, but like, I'm watching it from a different, you know, kind of place now. I'm trying as best I can to be
impartial
if possible. But it was the first time, like, I've kind of, and it was the Wasp game a few weeks ago, and for Leinster, and this one, I've actually been excited to go watch a rugby and not be kind of commentating.
I was shocked. I turned on a rugby match on TV at the weekend, and you weren't on it. It must have been the first time in years that you hadn't been.
Yeah, I'm a hard worker, Will. I have to say, I was just buzzing. I couldn't have been happier to, you know, like, some people are so tied up in being right all the time, and yeah, it's great to have a bit of fun and have a go at seeing what the score will be. And I stand over what I was saying before. Like, my logic, I think, is fairly sound in that, you know, had only beaten them once in 100 years, and the time before they were on their fifth choice lock or whatever, so they didn't win a line out all day.
It's not very magnanimous. I thought you'd be a bit more grovelling, a bit more magnanimous.
No, I'd never be. No, I'm not going to grovel. No, look, it's I made a call on basically previous history. And I thought Ireland did really, like, they were just great.
So,
they were really good.
Having made that call before the game, and where you thought the two teams were, and having watched this game, we shouldn't be getting ahead of ourselves. Like, we're probably, the gap is closed, but would you go along with some of the talk that we're now peers, or not even peers? But,
hang on, we're peers, definitely.
No, we're definitely peers. Yeah. But I still feel like we still have to reach their level consistently. Like, beating them once in the Aviva, and once in Chicago, when, as you said, there was a couple of injuries, I still feel...
Hang on. The gap has definitely closed. There's no
100%,
doubt about
that.
And you think of the one after Chicago, where they got really lucky with a few decisions in terms of, you know, there should have been a yellow or red card, at least, you know, for, like, the Fekitone was definitely a yellow card. There were a few ones, things that went their way in the return leg. And we had a few guys injured in fairly bad collisions. That I think, you know, Jaco Piper's in the middle. He's just absolutely garbage as a referee, you know. I have to say, I think the gap is definitely closed. I still thought they'd be two. I didn't think two tries was a drubbing against the All Blacks. I knew
15 points, you know, that was the extra point that really made it into a...
Well, I just thought
it turned it from a tough defeat into a colossal pumping.
That's not a colossal. Like, 20 points, 30 points is a pumping by the All Blacks, and they deliver them regularly enough to teams. Yeah, look, I suppose they haven't. It looked to me like they don't really. The kicking thing is actually going to be a problem for them, possibly against Ireland, if they're not going to use it. I think it looks like they might have to put Ben Smith at fullback, because otherwise they're going to be under pressure dealing with Ireland's aerial threat. But they also can't really attack Ireland in the air, which is actually going to be a problem for them, because I think if you look at Ireland, when they don't compete and they don't slow down the stuff in the tight exchange, they're all just fanning out and they're leaving one person in the backfield, you know, which is really hard to break down. Really hard, no matter how good you are. I mean, and I think if you look at the teams as well, like, they have Sonny Bill to come back in. They didn't play that badly on the weekend, by the way. Ireland played really well and suffocated them. And I just think they didn't kick well. I mean, whenever they kicked in the first half and in different periods, they got lots of pay out of that. Rory Best had a great day throwing the ball. Obviously, Dev Toner makes a big difference, and you saw how it kind of capitulated when himself and Pete O'Mahony went off, how difficult it was to actually get ball against them. So it shows how his importance, you know, which was good, great for him, I suppose. But yeah, like, for me, it looks like they might have a bit of an issue. And you look at the Lions in the summer, held them scoreless. Now, I know the conditions were very poor that day, but the conditions weren't poor on the weekend. And they just kind of didn't. I thought there was more opportunities for them to kick. I know it's not in their makeup really to be kicking all the time, but they used to do it an awful lot with Dan Carter. They used to kick a lot from their own half. I think the stats were actually quite telling in that.
Joe Schmidt, I remember, brought them up the last time at the World Cup when people were giving it about Ireland kicking a lot. He said,
they actually kick more from their own half.
More than anyone.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I wonder, is there something in that? I think you need to keep that Irish defence honest. And if they can slip an extra guy into the line or two guys into the line all the time, you know, it gives you great, and the line speed they get, it makes it very, very difficult to break down. You're relying on kind of individual magic, you know, rather than concerted pressure. It's something they have to consider. I think they'll learn. I'm annoyed that they learned this now. I feel like they might, if they could have got away with a win here, a tight one or something, that maybe they would have been like, we're just the All Blacks, we'll just show up and do it. Whereas I'm actually thinking, like, they've loads they can learn from that one on the weekend. Whereas, you know, do you know what was kind of reassuring to me after the game, when I was kind of thinking, that's interesting. Like Conor Murray will make a big difference, even though yeah. Marmion was really, really good in the weekend. Like fair Ireland play to the guys
to come back as well.
Henshaw will make a massive difference. Conceivably, Sean O'Brien could make a big difference to that team as well. Dan Levy could make a big difference to that team as well. So, yeah, very interesting.
It looked like Joe Schmidt. Brilliant move by Schmidt.
It looked like Ben Smith got a little bit rushed into the line. He's kind of panicked. He actually should have been. If he had stayed, he committed really, really hard up high. It looks like, as well to me, that like once they went back the short side, that Damian McKenzie looked like I don't know where he started off, or whether he started too wide, or whether he didn't read the play going back. I mean, it did happen very, very quickly. But once they went back to short side and there was no Ben Smith, he should have been hightailing across. And the open side winger, who would have been Ione, should have been dropping back into the space that he left. So, yeah, it was a great spot by Schmidt. Whether he saw that Damian McKenzie was going to be, like, is maybe a little bit further over in the left-hand side of the pitch in terms of a starting position. And then all of a sudden, like, it's down to Ben Smith. So if they can isolate either, if he doesn't show early in the line, the chip is on. I think that's just Sockdale brilliance kind of spotting it. And Ben Smith kind of probably panicking a little bit when he sees the two-on-one. But if he sees who he's passing it to, it was a poor decision to get up that early. He should have waited.
It reminded me of when you said if Joe Schmidt was coaching the All Blacks, if they had those kind of moves and that kind of weaponry in their arsenal,
I told you, they'd be cutting teams apart. It'd be a nightmare. They'd be unbeatable. Seriously, they'd be unbeatable. Like, you just see the one in the first half was a really lovely play. He'd obviously spotted something with the short sides. Remember the one where Gary Ringrose passed it back to Josh van der Fleer?
Yeah.
And I think it was Keith Earls with some unbelievable footwork. I think it was Aaron Smith. Like, he literally grabs thin air. But yeah, look, it was a great performance. Like, I think the things they did, like, while it was a heroic performance in terms of effort, but that's what you have to do against those guys. They are the best in the world for a reason. There was nothing that they did that was, like, bar the Stockdale piece of magic and brilliance, like, they can repeat that. They can really do that again. And they have guys to come in who are better players. Like, I think Henshaw's better than Aki. And I think Murray is definitely better than Dan Marmion. So, like, we'll get better.
Last thing before we bring in our very special guest this week. Dealing with the pressure now. Ireland is a target on their back. They're now either world number two and pushing for number one, or as a few people are saying, they're probably climbed alongside the All Blacks. Traditionally, Irish rugby and Irish teams in general don't deal well when they are the front runners, when they're expected to deliver. You'd like to think that the way this team has progressed and what Joe Schmidt's done with them, that that's no longer the case with this team. But so how do you expect them to deal with this hype going into 2019, where they're favoured to win another Grand Slam and they're roaring hot second favourites to maybe even get to a World Cup final?
Well, I think you have to look at the key guys in the squad. You know, that's where that really comes in, because there's only so much a coach can say to try and, you know, frighten you into things. But like, I think you have to be comfortable. If you look at, like, you know, I think that there's a big Leinster contingent in the squad. They're used to winning. They've been expected to win and they've delivered. If you look at the key guys, your Conor Murray's, your Johnny Sexton's, your, we'll call it, you know, I think Rory Best as well is a key guy. But if you just think of his mentality, I still think Scanlon is a better player.
He's been there for three World Cup disasters.
Yeah, but like, sorry, if you look at the key guys, like, none of those guys are going to get ahead of themselves. Yeah. And I think they're all guys who, like, especially Murray and Sexton, those guys deliver on their skill set all the time. That's always a thing where you're kind of saying, well, like, if you can deliver on those things, then it's kind of easy for the rest of the team. They just have to try and fit in and deliver physically. And remember their job roles here and there. So I actually feel like it's kind of easier for those guys to deliver, because I feel like the key guys are really, they're in a great place to be. And they're also very physical. There's no weakness in the team defensively. The point is that I think in the key areas of the pitch, you look at the front five and actually how competitive it is, it keeps driving performances there. Like, if you have one bad one, you know, you could argue Tadhg Furlong probably can have a few bad ones. It looks like Rory Best can have a few bad ones. But leaving that aside, everyone else is fairly replaceable. You know, Ian Henderson's sitting on the bench there. Tadhg Byrne isn't even getting the 22 in the front five. You look in the back row, two guys injured there, Seanie O'Brien and Dan Levy. Jack Conan has definitely been at the best eight in the country so far this season.
Standard, to be fair,
was brilliant. Yeah, sorry, he was no, sorry, brilliant, sorry, yeah. No, hang on, I wasn't inferring that.
But I think a lot of people were saying he was one of the guys who needed
He had a great game. He was brilliant. Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Look, you know, I was wrong. I was worried that a lot of guys in key positions weren't playing well. Like Rory Best himself wasn't playing well. Robert Kearney was coming back from injury. So, you know, but he, in fairness, he's delivered fairly consistently when he comes back from injury. In fairness, he's really, really good at that. He's in superb pro, but obviously very strong mentally as well. So I wasn't really concerned on that. I was kind of thinking, oh, I wonder would it would be a great opportunity to see a young guy in there like Conway or Larmer. And from an attack perspective, obviously they offer a lot more. But it looks to me like there's lots of guys to come back in that could really add to the team, and you've lots of different options around the place. You know, you've Robbie Henshaw out, but look at how, like, Gary Ringrose was unbelievable on the weekend. His tackle count and his energy and just his general decision making defensively were just unbelievable. He was so game for, and up for the fight. So look, to answer you in a very long-winded way, like, they can deliver on those things again, and they have people that come in, and the nucleus of the team are quite experienced, but they're also good guys. You know, they don't get too far ahead of themselves. Johnny Sexton has been one of the best players in the world for a very long period of time and delivers consistently and is very hungry all the time to keep delivering and demands high standards around him. He's the guy that's touching the game plan alongside Conor Murray the most. They have the biggest effect on the game plan, and I think those guys are the key parts of it. I think that's why Ireland have been very consistent. Like, you look at the Irish team, bar the Scottish loss, really. You know, there was two Six Nations in a row. Like, that's unheard of. That's nearly a better win than the Grand Slam. It's the consistency. Will, we, like, you're asking me about can Ireland deliver consistently? We've never been able to do it before. That for me, like, I remember slagging. I used to always slag Johnny Sexton and it was Owen Redden about not having won a Grand Slam. But
they'll be targeting back to back Grand Slams now.
Yeah, of course. Like, they want to win it every year. The key thing is that they win it. That, like, you want to build consistency. You want to keep winning. That's like, look, the Grand Slam is, yeah, you want to win every match, but they'll be taking one game at a time. They want to win the thing. The key thing is that you're a winner and you keep breeding winners and you expect to win and you deliver when you're expected to win. And I think that's what they're trying to build in the setup. And I think they're doing a great job. They are doing a great job. Like, regardless of how that one went on the weekend, the consistency we've had has been fantastic. That was a once-off, really. But you need to be able to deliver a once off when it, because both camps had built that one up fairly big, to be a fairly big match, and I think they had built it up to be the biggest one of November, which is even more impressive from our perspective. So, can they deliver it again? I think they can. They need to understand, we needed to see that they could do it in a really once off when they had their full team out. They did do that, and we have more guys to come back. So, am I riding the wave? I probably am. I think I was interested to see how things panned out in the pack. We look better than them in the pack. We did. Like, that's the key thing against New Zealand. They're going to have, they have some magic at wide, but it looks like we have that too. And I think the pack squeezed them. They looks like they squeezed them to me, Will. Like, I've never seen New Zealand pack in the open play look like they were kind of ineffectual, not able to get their backline momentum. And that was what was most encouraging to me. So, yeah, I think we can do it.
And just before we bring on James Ryan to talk about last weekend's big win over the All Blacks, a reminder that you can have your say and vote in the Irish Independent Sports Star of the Year Awards. Just go to www.independent.ie/sportsstarvoting to have your say. And there's a whole host of great prizes there. A trip to Old Trafford to watch Man United versus Liverpool in 2019, a VIP trip to Cheltenham, tickets to All-Ireland finals. So plenty of prizes there. So definitely go and vote there. And now, without further ado, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Ireland and Leinster second row, James Ryan. James, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, lads.
And you've had a lot of memorable weekends over the course of 2018. Where does that last one against the All Blacks rank up there?
Yeah, it's definitely up there. It was class game to be involved in. And I think in terms of an atmosphere, in my kind of short career so far, it's definitely for the best I've been involved in, for that or Bilbao, really. It's class.
And I'm interested to know what the physical toll was, because, you know, we were talking about off air, there's this great clip of Keenan Healy coming off after 55 minutes and he just looks absolutely shattered. Like, he emptied his tank there. Like, what was your body like afterwards? I'm sure there was like an emotional high, but physically you were probably hobbling around like an old man.
Yeah, I was a bit. You know, physically I was wrecked, but I suppose you're on such a high after a win like that, it kind of doesn't really kick in for a bit. So probably the next morning was kind of an eye opener. I was pretty wrecked, but obviously, you know, when you get a result like that, you know, it kind of makes it all worth it.
And would it have been the most physically tough game you've played in so far?
I think so. Yeah, you kind of forget how hard some games are. You know, you play a game and you're like, geez, that was tough. But
what about that French one? But did you come off the bench in that one?
In the Six Nations?
Six Nations.
No,
I mean, you started that one.
I started that one, yeah. yeah, that would have been up there as well. But you kind of forget how hard each game is. But
it's probably a good thing.
Yeah,
if you're in the trenches, but, you need to have one of those memories. It's like, you know, women with kids—they never forget.
Oh God!
Yeah. Or they never remember. Sorry, how painful childbirth is, yeah. And they always say that. It's like front fivers when they're going into battle. They never forgot how hard it was the last time.
Yeah,
you need to have that short memory.
Yeah, well, no, it was. It's definitely up there. I can't remember any memory. Again, it was just tough, yeah.
Were there periods in it? So, you know, we always talked about 2013, and I was interested because I was watching the match with Mike McCarthy, who came on in 2013 as well. And we both said that, like, I played about 35 minutes of it. And I remember thinking, like, that was like death, honestly. So I came on the centre, and obviously the problem with fucking switching around in different positions, like, so I played most of my rugby on the wing. Probably wouldn't remember, Jamesy, at this stage now. It's fairly long ago. But to be honest, but yeah, like, it was so different in the centre. It's obviously way more attritional, you know, whereas I think when you're in the pack, maybe it's just all attritional to a certain extent, definitely in the front five anyway. But that was like death. And I remember Mike McCarthy said the same thing. He was like, that last phase of play, like, we were just gone. And Joe Schmidt actually adjusted the training off the back of it. He was like, actually, do you know, we've been training like for a 4 minute play, you know, the drill that he does. It's kind of like a continuous thing for 4 minutes, and you do maybe 3-4 sets. I don't know how many he does now, but it's really good. It's a great drill, like, but you're knackered doing it. And he kind of extended it out. So you lads are doing, you're getting all the pain from our loss in 2013, the extra minute on top, because he was like, actually, we need to be training for 5 minutes. That's the best teams are able to produce. So did you feel that in a very long-winded way? Did you feel that, like, there was long passages of play? You were like, Jesus, this is a pace I haven't played before.
There was definitely some passages in the first half when we were in there 22, and when we went down a couple of times, we came away with threes. When we were going around the corner a lot, and I remember thinking, fuck, this is tough. really tough work. And towards the end of the game as well, when we were defending for that last, whatever it was, how many minutes, that was tough as well. But no, like, you were so bollocks, but felt pretty confident as well that we were going to hold them out. I think, you know, that guys showed some real good energy, and the guys that came off the bench as well kind of added a lot as well.
Yeah, what was that final passage of play like from a player's perspective? Because I was in the stand, and, you know, the fields of Acton Roy ringing around the stadium. I don't know if you guys were even aware of that, or if you're just in the zone and you're just thinking of defending. Because there was a touch of 2013 about it as they kind of methodically moved their way down. You couldn't help but have, like, Vietnam-like flashbacks to that finale.
You can't help with the All Blacks. Like, if you even saw what they did in the Rugby Championship, South Africa should have beaten them over in where was it, Loftus-Versfield? And New Zealand scored, I don't know how many points in the last 20 minutes, and obviously scored the game winner right at the death. So you know how often they can do that. So, you know, we were kind of aware of that going in. But, you know, once the whistle blows, as well as that kind of euphoria, there is that sense of relief too, that, you know, they didn't steal it at the death, that we held them out.
My sense of it watching you, James, and I've just been really, really impressed, along with Evan. I'm sure you're probably ignoring all the plaudits, but my sense of it is that you have what's made the transition easier for you as a young player, and why you're able to deliver, you know, as each step in your career, you know, as you've gone up the levels. You seem like kind of a calm guy, and fairly, you know, like, you seem to think your way around the pitch. You know, I think you look like a very fit guy as well, which probably helps your thinking in those periods. Is that something that you practice, or is it just a natural, like, would you agree with the statement, first of all, that you'd be fairly calm and able to think things through even when you're working really, really hard? That's my sense of you as a player. Is that something that you think, am I touching on something that you feel is a strength for you?
Yeah, I'd like to think I'd be reasonably cool-headed when I'm out there. I think certainly in the lead-up to the game, I wouldn't say I'd be particularly cool-headed, especially kind of...
I'd be worried if you were.
yeah. You know, in the build-up and the match day and all that, but once the game starts, you kind of get into your flow. Yeah, I think I'd be reasonably calm.
It's interesting you mentioned the build-up and how you maybe you wouldn't be as calm. Like, has there been moments over this year where the enormity of the occasion and the build-up to it has kind of played in you? You're only 22 now, recently turned 22. You would have been at all the matches that Luke would have been playing in years ago for Leinster, the glory days.
Piss off, Will.
But have there been moments, I guess, even if you're just sitting down, like, flipping through the match day programme beforehand, where it's kind of dawned on you about how big some of these occasions have been?
Yeah, there have been moments. Like, even when we were leaving the Shelburne there last Saturday.
It's like, great, isn't it, the walk down?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I've done it a few times with the Six Nations and different games in November last year, but the noise coming out of the hotel, I haven't heard anything like it. It was unreal. And then we're getting onto the bus and you see the streets are lined with people and people are running out of the pubs to wave you on. There's definitely moments when you're like...
Give me one of those points.
Okay. Give me one of those points, yeah.
Oh, but, God, I'd murder one of those points.
Well, it's a funny one because obviously the All Blacks game was, you know, certainly from supporters, for the media, it was a huge deal being targeted from a long way out. But obviously you guys have a lot of matches to play before that, so you can't really certainly talk about it openly. But it's fair to say it probably was a game that you guys have been preparing for a long way out.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was having that shot at the number one team. So it was definitely, you know, a fixture that we targeted, but, you know, people forget that, you know, the week prior we had to work very hard to get a good result there against Argentina too. So it was two massive kind of physically tough testing games, as well as, I suppose, Italy as well in Chicago.
Yeah, and just in terms of, because, like, Will has made me eat humble pie really, really badly, and every single person I've come across is...
James, really, he predicted a 15-point All Blacks win. I tried to talk him out of it, but he was having none of it. He just refused to believe
Ireland
could win the game.
As I said in work, it was an emotional hedge. If they won, I feel great. If they didn't, I was like, well, I was right, I told you so. So it was exactly what that was. But look, I think the feeling amongst, you know, myself is that, and a lot of the people out there, is that there's a massive competition in the squad now, you know. And I suppose my view on it was that I thought, oh, geez, I've never seen the All Blacks not, you know, score a try, which was just, obviously against the Lions, but I think that's probably a one-off and it was poor conditions. The last time I think I can remember is the World Cup final, 95, I think.
It's only two times it's happened since.
Is that it? Yeah. Is that it? Was I right?
Andy Farrell's defence coach wrote, yeah, it's the right, yeah. Right answer.
Says the Stato. But I suppose I just didn't see that happen. I've never seen them really have two games in a row where England could well have beaten them last week as well, you know. Mm. What was the feeling like in the squad going in? Was there like a lot of confidence? I know were you very, Joke seems to be a guy who's been able to get the teams very, very process focused. But amongst the player group, what was your sense of it? Was there like a nervousness? Was there a confidence? Because I suppose from what we're looking at, we were just talking about it there, like, there seems to be, like, the ability to, I think, deliver and consistently, which is something that I think in the Irish team the last while has really impressed me. That has to come with a certain level of confidence. You know, you have to have, like, I don't think you can always be nervous before every game to deliver that.
Yeah.
Or to deliver on what you're trying to deliver in the games. Because I feel like there's kind of a bit of a, you know, there's the variance between the two, like, between good and bad. That kind of happens with the nervousness. Whereas with the confidence side, I always think those teams are able to deliver more consistently. Do you feel the confidence in the squad is basically in a long way?
Yeah.
Do you feel like, are they confident going into those tough games?
Yeah, I think we were confident going into it. We were obviously wary of New Zealand and how good they are, but yeah, confidence is definitely something that I think we had coming into the week, but probably excitement would be the biggest emotion of it all. I felt guys were just excited to, you know, at the opportunity really to go and have a crack, and, you know, those games don't come around that often, so that was kind of the striking thing for me, really. Yeah,
it's a funny one about the most recent game, and it put, I guess, a little bit of extra pressure on you, because there was a lot of people talking about the Chicago game and saying, ah, yeah, but you're Brody Retallick and Sam Hoylock like, weren't playing in that game, so there was
me.
A lot of, yeah, so there was a lot of emphasis on
Jesus. Will, just leave me alone.
So
you,
handy,
I'm already down.
Get
anyway. You won. You're right. Jesus.
But there was a lot of emphasis on those, you know, that world class pairing being back and what that could mean for the All Blacks, and obviously it was your first time playing them too. Like, how much of an emphasis in your build up did you put on going head to head with that pairing? Did you try to think about your own game, or were you really kind of focusing on ways you could attack them?
It kind of all kind of fed into it. I wasn't kind of overly analysing, you know, what Whitelock and Retallick were going to do, but I was certainly aware of, you know, their strengths and things like that. But, you know, New Zealand have so many strengths in that team. So, you know, literally talent is sprinkled everywhere. They got, you know, Bowden Barrett, Tim McKenzie, Artie Sevilla, Kieran Reid. So I think if you look too much at one or two guys, you know, you might be caught out a bit. So, you know, I was kind of aware of you know, the main players and in their team, and then as well as that, was kind of looking at, you know, what we needed to do as well.
So do you generally, you wouldn't measure yourself head to head versus your direct opponent? Like, you know, obviously you played some world class second rounds this year, like Mauro Itoje, a few minutes against Ivan Etzebeth, I think, in 2017 as well. You know, you wouldn't generally then kind of say, would you benchmark yourself against that specific opponent or the whole
team?
No, it'd be more the collective.
Be more my own game, really. That's what I'd be measuring myself on, if I'm happy with that, and obviously the collective outcome as opposed to, you know, my opposite number.
And do you have a list of numbers that you look at, you know, carries, tackles, yards made? Because, you know, there's a lot have been made of some of the big kind of tallies you've been putting up. Do you go back after a game and look at it and say, oh, that was, you know, higher than I'd hoped, or oh, that's a bit low?
Don't lie, I know.
yeah, certainly, like, you know, the more involvements you can have in a game, kind of the more influence and you can have. So, they'd be one of the things I'd be looking at after a game, yeah, definitely.
You have any kind of, you know, it's interesting, I suppose, from my time in camp, when I first started, I think it was just when the data started coming into rugby, you know, all the Kitman labs, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. So we were trying to figure out what was important, you know. And it used to be always, like, we used to come in on the Monday and, like, who had the highest running meters. And like, Jesus, look at how far your man ran. And you look back at the game and it was like, Jesus, he was crap though. You know, he must have been running around like a headless chicken.
Yeah.
Or when everyone else is taking a break, he must have been doing a bit of jogging away in the corner, whatever it was. But like, it is funny how much the data points that you're kind of figuring out, oh yeah, look, that's actually important that we measure that. We're kind of coming away because we come back to New Zealand a bit at the end and maybe you have a little look forward as well. But just what are you looking at when you're looking at the data points? Because, I know the numbers you're putting up are really, really good, but for you to have a good game, what's the first thing you're looking at?
It wouldn't be kind of meters run and collision load and all that kind of data. Mm. I'd have to watch it first to get kind of an idea of the context and all that. But I suppose a number of tackles, kind of number of positive ruck involvements, number of positive carries, they'd be kind of what I'd be looking at, really.
And in terms of, say, so the tackle stats are what have really, I suppose, jumped out at me. And, you know, a lot of locks usually, like, generally have fairly good tackle stats anyway, because you're usually in good positions to be, you know, you're in tight places, but you seem to have a lot of positive ones. I'm always really impressed by that. Like, have you worked a lot on the technique? It's funny. Like, I look at a lot of young guys that come in. They can kind of be, especially in second row. They have a lot of, like, because I think your best rugby is going to be ahead of you as long as you look after all your joints and all that kind of stuff. Which I'm sure you look like a very diligent trainer. I heard you are. I've been doing my background checks on you. But no, I just think, you know, have you done a lot of work in the technique, Pete? That's the last thing that comes to guys that come out of setups that have, you know, you have a good grounding. Lots of good players coming in from Michaels, but there's still a big gap between, you know, playing for Ireland and playing, you know, for Leinster. You seem to have made the jump up very good because I think your technique's very good. Do you work a lot on it?
Yeah, I do a bit. We do a lot of work at Leinster in terms of, you know, being able to spot gaps and holes early, and then being able to run lines early, and then in terms of, you know, the contact work, you know, being able to keep your feet alive and, you know, fight for that extra, you know, 1, 2, 3 inches. Mm-hmm. So it would be an area that I'd be working on. Yeah.
And in terms of the tackling itself, that's the thing that's really stood out to me, because I think lots of young guys, they get their feet fairly far away from the contact. Now that you can get away with a bit of that as a second row, because usually you're taller, longer arms, etc. And the tackling isn't always in the wider spaces. But you look like you get your feet in right. Like, who's working on that stuff? Which are you? Is Stuart good on that, on the technique piece?
Yeah, I've been doing a bit of work with Hugh Hogan.
Oh, sorry, Hugh. Yeah, apologies. Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes I kind of had a tendency the last kind of, whatever, 5-6 months to, I'd be chopping a lot, but I'd be kind of going in and kind of like a headless chicken, and I'd be kind of just flying in and I wouldn't be keeping my feet alive. And while it'd be effective, it kind of exposed my head a bit. You know, I ended up getting 1 or 2 concussions. And then as well as that, you know, if I kept my feet alive, or if I keep my feet alive, I can make much more dominant tackle because I can get that leg drive and, mm-hmm. and all that. So, yeah, there's been kind of a small shift in kind of that mindset, you know, in terms of instead of, you know, you're going to need to chop sometimes, but instead of kind of that being your first, you know, priority, being able to make, you know, more dominant tackles by keeping your feet alive and that leg drive.
And just to go back at your own story for a moment, obviously you missed a full season up pretty much with a nasty hamstring injury. Like, as well as obviously rehabbing the injury, was there stuff you worked on over that year to allow yourself, because you pretty much hit the ground running straight away then when you did break into the senior team, it was pretty seamless. But having not played almost any rugby, what did you work on besides the injury during that year to kind of make that step up, do you think?
To be honest, the main, what I got out of that most was just the S&C work I did. I spent a lot of time in the gym and I suppose when I got running again out in the pitch, getting kind of a lot of conditioning done. So that would be the main bit. And, you know, Killian Reardon, who was the academy physio or academy S&C coach at the time, he's now one of the senior S&C coaches, looked after me really well. So Fergal Karen, you know Fergie, don't you?
I know Fergie. Yeah. I was living with Fergie, basically. He was our rehab specialist. Yeah, there was a few guys in there.
He was my rehab coach, and he was class as well. Yeah. So, you
know. They're great opportunities.
Do you, like,
the mindset when you're injured, Will, like, you have to see it as an opportunity, you know? If you don't, I think it can become a very kind of dark hole for you. Mm-hmm. But like, as you say, and it's funny, like in the grand scheme of things, you know, and now we're talking about it and you've had a great season last year and you look like you're continuing through that, but they're a great opportunity for you, especially as a young player.
How good was Josh when he came back?
Unbelievable. But he looks like he's a little bit stronger. Yeah. Looks like he's put on a bit more. You know, and that's what happens when you get the chance.
Henshaw at the end of last season came back in great form.
Robbie's been like that for. Robbie's a bit more further down the track than the two. Well, maybe not so much Josh, but definitely than yourself. When I was looking at your frame coming in, I think we all knew you were coming for a bit, but I was thinking it's going to take him a while to get the weight, especially if you're on the tight head side in the scrum.
Yeah.
But it looks to me like that actually really benefited you, and it looks like you obviously have a good mindset for the training. You like the training, but it looks to me like that made a big difference to you, because you look like you're well able to compete in the really physical stuff. But that comes with hard work in the gym. It looks like it had a big impact on you, did it?
Yeah, I think it did. As I said, I think all that gym work kind of ended up being, you know, a blessing in disguise in a way, because, you know, when I eventually was able to get back playing, you know, I had that extra few kgs of muscle, and I was definitely in better shape than I would have been, you know, had it not been injured. So yeah, it was probably a silver lining.
And who you hang around in the gym? Who are you lifting with? Who's the partner? Can't be Dev.
There's a few now.
Dev is unbelievable, man. Honestly, like, he's still a freak of an athlete, like, never injured, but like, he's in the gym, he's an absolute weed.
In the gym he might be, but when he's out in the training paddock,
he's a beast. Yeah,
he's hitting unbelievable meters the whole time.
He's so fit. He's unbelievably so fit.
Never stops. But
you would leave you a bit. I see yourself, the two Bash brothers. I saw you in that thing for Gloxy.
Levy. Yeah.
Are you lifting with him in the gym?
He's lifting a bit. Yeah. Yeah, I'd be living with him a bit, and Fardo as well.
Oh, Fardo, he's a great man. Sorry, Scott Fardo. We had him on the live show. But he seems to have been a great influence on a lot of the young guys. And oftentimes, you know, you're a bit of a product of the environment you come into. I think you seem to time it. I mean, whatever, you know, it's obviously a bit of luck involved in that. But, you know, I came into a great setup, all your Dricos and your Shaggies and all these guys, and Gordon Darcy, whoever you could pick, that whole back line were brilliant for me to come into. And Felipe, obviously, I know Felipe a little bit differently to you know him now. He's obviously, he's hair doctor there to me. He'll always be hair doctor. But, you know, you seem to come into a great environment. You know, the coaching staff, very settled. Leo Cullen, of course, at the helm, couldn't be a better position for someone like yourself to be learning off him. But someone like Fardy seems to have had a massive influence on the younger guys. And it's great to hear that you've obviously paired up with him a little bit. Has he been a big influence on you?
Yeah, he has. I've learned loads off Fardy. And, you know, on the pitch, obviously, but like, even off the pitch, he's a great bloke, and like, he's hilarious. He's always like taking the piss, and he gives us, but we definitely give back at him. yeah, no, he's one of the main personalities, I think, in the squad at the moment.
And is Nugget still the sheriff in the dress room, or is he quieting down in his old age? The
people's champ.
The people's champ.
yeah, he'd be one of the sheriffs now, yeah.
What about McFadden? He's himself, and are they still bullying everyone, the two of them?
Are they pulling everyone?
Are they too old to be bullying anyone?
Yeah, listen, Nugget keeps me on my toes anyway. They both do.
Just to go back to the end of that injury season, you talk about, you know, you used to put on a bit of size, and it was a silver lining, because obviously you got called into the Ireland squad at the end of that campaign. You hadn't even played for Leinster yet. Well, like, did you know that was going to be on the cards? Had Joe Schmidt rang you up and, you know, introduced himself or chatted to you about it, or was it just out of the blue?
No, it was a small bit out of the blue. I was kind of coming towards the tail end of my rehab, and I can't really remember what exactly happened, but somebody told me at Leinster that there was an opportunity, like, potentially, that I could have been involved in the summer tour, and that was kind of it. And then I remember getting an email saying that you'd been included in the extended squad. So then I knew it was obviously a strong possibility, and I was sent to play a couple of matches. I played with Munster Development and...
Play with Munster?
Yeah.
Play with the Stags? Yeah. Jesus, you traitor.
Last week you literally said how different my career would have been had I played for Munster.
Keep going with the podcast. You're losing the run of yourself. Too many opportunities I'm presenting you with. Get out of it. We're sitting on money messing. So that is when
I knew I was in with a crack. And then I got the eventual email saying that you'd been included in the summer squad.
I read an interview you gave when you said you went apeshit. You went crazy.
Yeah,
Don't be too cool, man.
I'm saying I was cool now, but that's the quotes I read.
That was unbelievable. I was like,
did you do the shaggy? Did you do the one of those ones, like the thin red line piece?
No, to be honest,
shaggy after 2009. It's one of the greats. Sorry, you probably know. You know the footage of Shaggy on Sky Sports where he's doing this one, like, he just that's not, and he got slagged for years. It's like thin red line stuff. But, like, I mean, those are amazing moments. I think as well, it ties in to the earlier point, like, getting that exposure to Joe Schmidt. Like, what was that first experience like in camp? I remember my first experience with him in Leinster, and all the Munster lads, Ulster lads, remember their first experience with him in Irish camp. What was it like? It's such a learning experience, I thought, anyway.
Yeah, it was class.
Deep end, isn't it?
Yeah. I was obviously a bit nervous going in, but once I kind of got in there and got a couple of sessions on the pitch under my belt, and like you kind of get into a flow then, and obviously going on to the US, you know, that was the first game. I got my first cap in New Jersey. Unbelievable experience. And then we flew to Japan, so the US and Japan were two pretty cool places to be going for my first tour. It was an unbelievable tour. Yeah, I loved it.
One funny thing, I guess, from your perspective, given what age you are, is that, like, when Luke first met Joe Schmidt, like, no one really knew much about him up in like Leinster or Ireland. Like, he hadn't really made his name as a coach for us. Whereas you first meet him, his reputation very much precedes him. He's won all the Heineken Cups, all the Six Nations. Like, you grew up as a Leinster and Ireland fan. Like, is there a bit of an intimidation factor at all, like, that you're coming in with such a big name there as the coach, or is it just another coach for you?
Obviously you respect him so much and for what he's achieved and everything and all that. So
Hard one to answer. Do you respect your Corey? Look, he's kind of guy. I suppose you come up in an era where, and it's really interesting because, like, I suppose I would have been playing with that group of guys you would have been watching as a teenager, and I suppose you're from a rugby mad family, of course. All the brothers were your brother. There was one of your brothers had a very unfortunate injury, didn't he? Of course,
Mark.
But they were all brilliant rugby players, weren't they? I remember my dad.
David's playing at the moment. He's in the Irish under-20s. And he's playing rugby with UCD, so he's going really
well.
What
position is he?
12.
Oh, he's 12,
yeah.
Is he? But they were all, you guys were always, I remember coming up through schools, it was always the Ryans lads, they're going to be, I remember my dad, because our dads would be pally enough, and he was saying, geez, those Ryans lads, apparently they're meant to be brilliant, you know. That was my impression of my old man there, pretty weak. But I suppose you've been coming up for a long time, but you would have been watching, I suppose, as rugby mad lads, rugby mad family, all the Leinster team. Mm. So again, like, I remember, because it was a surreal enough moment for me coming in. I remember my first summer coming out of school, and I remember coming in and all the rugby, like the Irish guys have been maybe a little bit later back because they were away on tour. But when they came into training first, I was like, Jesus, like there's Draco, like, oh my God, you know what I mean? Yeah. Was it a bit like that with Joe Schmidt or with like Jamie, of course, would have been there? Was it a bit like that when you came in?
Yeah, it was definitely. When you're like, I remember playing with like Johnny, like Sexton, and Church and Issa, all those lads, like the whole lot of them. Yeah. The first kind of few months, you
don't
kind of
drop
have to,
the ball.
Yeah, yeah, you're like that, but also you're just like, kind of have to pinch yourself. It was class. Yeah. It was very cool, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it is funny. Probably the first time Johnny goes through you for a shortcut for missing a play, you're like, that actually, fucking asshole.
Yeah. Novelty wears off pretty quick.
To be honest, yeah. I don't get too much because I'm in the second row, so listen, it's usually just around the corner for me. But I think the backs get a harder time.
And I guess your development has seemed to be quite seamless in terms of slotting in at Leinster and then at Ireland. What has been the toughest, I guess, experience of your professional career so far? Because it does seem to have gone quite seamlessly for you, but I'm sure there's been a few instances where you found, Jesus, it's actually quite tough.
It's definitely not easy. Like, it hasn't been seamless. Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about the injury, actually. The injury must have, because that was a serious enough injury. I remember there was lots of chat, a lot of people talking garbage about, you know, that being possibly your career being over and all this kind of stuff. Someone in this building here, actually. Like, talk to us about that, because that's a big, like, early on in your career, it was a serious injury, you know, and you've come back really, really strong from it. But, like, talk to us a little bit about that, because that's a tough challenge. I had lots of those challenges in my career, and you've come back stronger, so obviously you're mentally strong. But what did you go through initially in your initial thoughts on it, you know?
Yeah, that was pretty tough at the time, because obviously it was a serious injury, but the year before had been such a unbelievable year with the under-20s, my first time in, you know, playing in the Six Nations and
beating the All Blacks as well.
We beat New Zealand. We, you know, went to the World Championships, got to the final. Didn't end the way we would have wanted, but like it was a class year. Really exciting stuff. So kind of to go from that then to the following year, the beginning of the season, to not being able to play at all, it was definitely changed things a bit. So that probably made it a bit more difficult. But once the rehab started and I was in the gym, I kind of just got on with it because, you know, I probably would have been playing, you know, maybe I could have played, you know, a few caps, but it wasn't going to be the biggest year for me anyway.
Are you one of these people that writes down goals? Like, so when you get the injury, it was a great tool that I had. I used to just, you know, say, all right, calm down a second here. Let's figure this thing and let's get it down on paper. Have a plan, because it's funny when you have a plan how you can kind of relax, how you can say, right, well, look, that makes sense to me. I think if I do those things, I can get back. Are you one of those kind of people? Would you have a process that you go through when you have a setback?
Yeah, I think I would. I targeted getting back a bit earlier than I actually did end up getting back, and all that kind of thing. And then I targeted, you know, being able to put on 2 or 3 kgs of muscle and increase my body weight, and then obviously getting capped the following year with Leinster and all that. But I wouldn't be kind of overly obsessive about it either. If that's
not what I've heard. Yeah. I'm only messing. But like, in terms of, I was like, so like, was there a rehab group that you were with? Was it like, what like, so when you go on the journey, sometimes you're on your own. I had a few ones where I was completely on my own for like 9 months. It was a disaster. Yeah. But you hear some people and there's a nice little rehab group and they get into a routine, you know, you might be able to eat together, and it's easy to kind of keep your spirits up. Did you have a bit of that, or were you on your tod?
To be honest, it was just myself and Ferg.
Ferg, no better man.
Yeah, exactly. Ferg was class, because
great trainer as well.
Some days you come in and you're just like, you might feel like shit. And he's a great knack of kind of getting your spirits up again, isn't he?
He's obviously one of the funniest blokes, so I don't know if he's gotten more serious since I left, but he is just the best crack of all time. But Ferg as well is like a lunatic of a trainer, so I mean, he'd be great for that as well. The second rows in that are, you know, renowned. You have to have a big engine. But
and it was killer as well. Killing Reardon.
Were you doing boxing with him?
Did I do boxing with him?
See, he's gone pro now.
I did do a few. I don't think I was boxing him.
Thank God.
Yeah. But I was doing all sorts of boxing circuits and all that. Yeah, geez, I remember there was definitely a few circuits that
McFadden's feisty as well. He's such a competitor as well. Like, he wants to win every single thing he's doing.
He's a beast. Yeah. Like,
he is a beast as well, isn't he? Yeah. But, like, they're the guys, I suppose. And when you look at people you're chasing in training, so we talked about Scott Fardy, and, you know, obviously Dev is obviously great in the training. It's obviously pretty hard for a guy who's 6'10 or 6'11, whatever he is, to be pretty, you know, effective in the gym. He just kind of manages himself and keeps himself fit. And he's done an unbelievable job of that. But, like, who do you look at when you're training? Who do you say, God, I've got to be... I've got to get him. That's the who's got a target on their back when you're training. Anyone in Irish camp, even
a target on their back, or somebody that I'm like, geez, he's good.
Both.
Okay. The two, I feel like the two go hand in hand, because I always used to be saying, Jesus, if I can keep up with Ferg, or if I'm close to Ferg, we're quite different. Like, he has an unbelievable engine. I would have been more, but I said, I know I'm training well, if I can keep up with Ferg.
Yeah, you know who are? I think Ed and Brian Byrne are two of the best trainers I've come across.
Really?
Yeah.
But they've had a few tough injuries in that as well. So they're obviously, I mean, they must be great. Yeah, they come back so well this season.
And especially. I mean, I thought my injury was bad. I mean, he was ravaged.
13, 14
them.
Months was he with that? Or maybe more, 18. Longer. Was it? 18, was it?
Yeah, but I think for different injuries, it was like 2 years.
The knee thing, yeah.
But they're always just training unbelievably well. And so they'd be kind of two guys. And then I suppose in the gym, if you're anywhere near Porter in terms of what he's lifting,
Jesus. He seems to be chewing
up your daunting enough.
You're doing
is he better than Churchy? Oh, he'd hate this now. This is big, that's actually the toughest question of the night.
Okay,
the well, Churchy or the Bashford is definitely
he's better than Churchy with the legs, with the lower limbs.
Is he?
But
Churchy,
yeah, he is. Yeah, I think so.
No way, yeah, I can't believe that. Yeah. I never thought I'd see that. Yeah, I saw him, I remember seeing him when I was finishing up. I remember seeing
Porter.
He broke
Church's record.
For the bench,
for the squat,
I remember seeing him with
has an edge over him up with the chest and with the upper body, I think.
Was he?
Yeah, in the bench press.
Jesus, that's mad, isn't it? Amazing when you consider Church has come back from that neck injury. Like, you want, like, honestly, I went all the way up with Keane Healy. Like, that's the Shea Pale, or the Church as he calls himself. Churchy, like, when we were, he was in my school's year, you know, he is just one of the most incredible athletes I've ever come in. His balance, like, he's just and his flexibility.
Yeah, mad flexible.
He's a freak, isn't he? Like, to see someone being able to lift more weights, you know, I'm just astounded by it. But that's amazing. Like, it is funny. And it's funny when you're in the gym, Will, because, like, you always have people. I remember thinking, like, geez, that McFadden will just go and go and go. But if I can be close to him, I know I'm doing well.
Yeah.
And I used to always have, I used to try and, myself and Redden as well, if he was running, I was saying, geez, if I can keep up with Reds or, you know, I know I'm fit, because then we used to compete really hard in training against each other.
He's not as competitive in the local Bendon gym and Kim. Yeah. but just what we're talking about, I guess, the training that you guys are doing, how do you find going between Irish camp and Leinster camp? Because I guess each one demands its own different thing. And it's your first year or two going into both. Do you find you have to, like, be of a different mentality, or is a lot of different preparation for one or the other? Or do you find it quite easy to go between both?
I'd find it. Like, I think they're both very similar setups in a lot of ways. Obviously, some of the differences being, you know, obviously you're staying overnight in Irish camp, so you're kind of away from home more. And you know, sometimes the games with the national team would be, you know, bigger in terms of the provincial games. You know, like a game like last weekend, for example. So I think, you know, with the expectations and, you know, the enormity of some of those games, probably one difference would be kind of your kind of feelings going into the game. You might be a bit more nervous or a bit more anxious because of kind of the, as I said, the enormity of the games. So I think just being able to manage that mental side of things is one of the main areas.
Would you ever read stuff on the build-up to a game, or do you like to shut yourself off completely?
I like to shut myself off, yeah.
And in terms of, as well, because we saw the impact that Dev had coming off the bench in terms of calling the line-outs, and I always think that's the, do you know, when you have a young 10, it's the kicking part, it takes them a few years to kind of get up to speed with that kind of stuff. Like, what's the situation there? Like, what do you, are you sitting in with Dev when he's doing all the thinking? Is he kind of leading the line-out stuff as well as obviously Simon in Irish camp? Obviously you want to get to that point, because I presume you want to get to that point where you're saying, or whoever's the coach is saying, James, our man, he's going to be calling the line-out for us. You know, he's leading that for us. But I presume there's a bit of a journey to go on. Like, I feel like the kickers as well have to do the same thing, with, you know, just in terms of being under pressure and delivering there. Yeah. What do you do to try to prepare yourself for that? Is it just keep yourself in the vicinity of Dev and Simon when they're making the calls and the decisions for the week?
Well, kind of Dev and Hendy and Pete, you know, which side would kind of discuss the kind of the options going into a game. And you know, Dev's a great line-out caller. Hmm. He's somebody that...
What does it take to be a great line-out caller in your eyes? In your mind, even?
Dev's somebody that doesn't get flustered very much. So I think, you know, if you've got a line-out that you need to win in the 5 metre...
helps when you're 6'11", man.
Yeah. Throw it to me. the last play of the game, you know, yeah. Like, you'd trust him to make the right call because he's very cool. He rarely kind of loses the head, you know.
Seems like you have to be a smart enough guy. Paul O'Connor, very smart guy. Dev, Henny, very bright guy.
Henny's a good caller too. I'm kind of learning loads off him. But I think, yeah, you need that experience, you know, of calling in a game and I don't think I've had any experience in calling in a game, but kind of that exposure of, you know, making a bad decision and, you know, learning from that. But as I said, you know, that experience kind of in a game was the main thing, yeah.
And do you push for that? Like, so say, I presume Leo as well, you must have a very close relationship with Leo, given your positions and that. I know he obviously has to distance himself to a certain extent from some of the players when you're making the decisions on who's going to be in the team, et cetera, et cetera. But without getting too far ahead of ourselves, it looks like you're fairly settled in the team at the moment anyway. I know there's lots of guys coming up behind you, your Ross Maloney's and these guys who are providing great competition and that. But at the moment, you look like you're probably the number one choice there at the moment, and a bit of a mainstay, definitely. So I presume Leo is kind of in your ear a lot, and you have to be a bit closer to Leo and create a good relationship there.
Yeah,
and he was such a great caller, you know, from what I heard from the guys. Mm. I mean, what do you say, Leo? Like, because I presume you're going to have to try and say, well, look, Leo, I need to improve this. As you say, I need to be in a big game and possibly make a bad decision to really get really good at this. Like, what have you broached that with him at all? Do you have those conversations with guys?
Yeah. It's been able to call it something I definitely like to add to my game.
Mm-hmm. Because you're definitely capable of it. Like, you obviously believe that in yourself, of course.
I do, absolutely. You know, obviously playing with Dev so much, it's a real strength of his game. So the opportunities to kind of to be in that position wouldn't kind of come up as much because of that. But I have spoken to him about it, and, you know, I think I will get a few opportunities at some point in the season to call, yeah.
And after a fantastic 2018, after a fantastic 2018, obviously there's like a lot of people looking forward to 2019 and what that brings, a potential World Cup that you'd obviously hope to be involved in. It would be your first World Cup. Like, how much of an excitement is that on the horizon looking forward?
Yeah, it is, yeah. A lot of excitement, to be honest. But sort of still kind of coming off the back of the last few weeks, I've kind of loved all that. And you know, we've got, I know it's the boring answer, but we've got some big games coming up in December with Leinster, kind of away to Bath and then home in the Aviva. So there's so much, and then we've got a Six Nations. I got to be playing well to get selected for that too. Mm. So you know, whilst it might not seem like it's that far away, there is a lot of rugby to be played before then.
Yeah.
So much can happen between then and now, you know.
True, and it's funny, we had Keane Healy in 2 weeks ago and we asked him how he dealt with the success he had had, because he had similar success to yourself at the same age, and he said he went wild. He said he was like crystal, like
everything. He's just one of the, like, honestly, as I said at the time, there is no one in the world like that guy. I just know that.
I'm personality types. I'm not expecting the same answer from James, to be fair. But how would you say that you've dealt with the success you've had in the last year?
How would I've dealt with it? It's kind of...
You know, obviously, he's not going to say he lost a run himself.
No,
Keane's settled
now. I'm just curious to see what he's saying.
But, like, I mean, of course, like, your friends and all that. So, like, obviously, things change for you. Like, I was in the same position as you. Things do change for you, you know. But amongst your friends, if you have really good friends and really tight unit, I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
They're just going to slag you. Like, yeah, exactly, I was great. Yeah. Like, honestly, I remember Zeebo getting picked ahead of me in the World Cup in 2015, and all the lads went on the piss, and they sent me this video of them singing Zeebo, Zeebo. But that's what kept you on the ground. They were that my whole career. They're just abusing you. But
that's more kicking you when you're down than keeping you on the ground.
No. It was all love. Yeah. But like, no, the thing is, like, I presume your friends are great at that. You must have a tight knit unit. You look like you're still friendly with all your school friends.
Yeah, they're my mates.
Brothers, dad, everyone fairly keep you fairly grounded.
They do, yeah. I mean, it's kind of, they go actually everywhere as well. Like they're over in the US for my first cap, they're over in France last year, the Six Nations. They're at all the home games. And it kind of makes those days, like, as you know yourself, so much better. Like,
unbelievable.
Coming in after a win, and I mean, it wouldn't be half as good if we weren't able to share with, if we weren't able to share with, like, your family and your best mates, you know, and have a few points with them. I've definitely got a very close-knit group of mates.
We were talking about it before we came on, though. Like, it is when your mates are there as well. Like, the team, yeah, it's unbelievable. Like, and you're with the team, but if you have the added little bit of your family there and your pals, like, I remember after in 2009, one of my mates coming on, we were just saying,
it's a long day for the lads, but it sounded like a kickoff.
Like, so one of my pals was on the pitch with us in 2009 in Murrayfield. He literally had escaped through, he was one of my closest friends. And it was the funniest thing. I remember looking around and I was like, Jesus, that's, I'm not going to say his name. But like, it was unbelievable, you know. And he was, even afterwards, I remember one of the lads running naked down the street in Edinburgh. He did a street out of the car. So they were in the car, they're all driving back, they'd driven over to Edinburgh for the night. And this fella, who shall remain nameless as well, used to play in the rugby team in Black Rock. He was second row, wild man.
Remain nameless, he just basically described his position.
Could be one of two people. And they'll definitely know who it was, but he's an absolute wild man. But they were stopped the traffic. Anyway, he had a big night the night before, but the traffic was just about to move, and he literally ran across, like, through Edinburgh town, like, still starkers. It was one of the, honestly, it was just great times. But I had a similar
experience. Did you? One of my mates had a similar experience after Twickenham.
Oh, really?
he'll remain nameless too, but he made a good show of himself.
Yeah, but it's important.
In a good way, though.
They're great. Like, they're special times, because, like, as much as I would say to you, like, you know, there's great things ahead of you, you just don't know. Sure. You know, and you've had one big injury so far. I had lots of bad luck throughout my career, and it ended, you know, prematurely. So you do have to enjoy them, Will. Like, you know, and it's great to hear that you are enjoying it, because I think when I started off, I probably didn't do it enough. And I regret that a little bit to a certain extent, because they are special times. You know, there's so much of your life that, you know, all things going well, that you can't play, you know, you can't play sports at a top level or an elite level. So you have to make the most. So it's great to hear you're doing that. But as well, talk to us a little bit about the home and like, again, all the Ryans, obviously some very tidy rugby players. One of your brothers, obviously, very unlucky with injury, but, you know, your dad is obviously a great rugby player as well. What was the nurture like from home? Was it very competitive at home with all of you there?
I wouldn't say it was. We weren't really competitive with each other. We all took to rugby from a very young age. And like some guys, like yourself, you played a lot of GA and stuff, did you?
Yeah.
Some guys play a lot of GA or football growing up, and that's great. But for us, it was kind of just rugby from a very young age. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but we just took to it like a duck in water. And we played our mini rugby with Lansing, and then obviously with Michaels. And the three of us were pretty good players when we were younger. And obviously my dad was a big rugby man, played with Lansdowne. They won the double in 86 with Euro.
Still going on about it.
That
Lansdowne team, I tell you. Shut up, so, Lansdowne.
Yeah, we were a big rugby family, in fairness.
Yeah. And you have an identical twin brother. Is he the same size as you?
He's a non-identical, actually.
Oh, non-identical.
He's not the same size as me, but he's pretty tall. He's 6'4 and a half. He was a very good rugby player, but he was destroyed with injuries. Did his cruciate twice, fibula, collarbones, the whole lot, you name it. So, that's kind of.
Do you kind of like part of what drives you? Is it to kind of when your brother can't play because of injury, does it drive you to want to kind of have success for the both of you?
I think what drives you the most is kind of. like being able to, as I said, if you, you know, coming off the back of a win like on Saturday or some of the success that we had last year, you know, if you weren't able to share that with your family and your best mates, it wouldn't be half as good, you know. That would probably be the biggest driver of it all, you know, having those moments after a game with your old man or your parents or your brother or your mates. Yeah, that's certainly that kind of certainly something that would drive you on, I think, yeah.
And have you any personal goals in terms of, because I think, you know, if you keep going the way you're going, there's you know, personal, look, it's not about personal accolades, but I'm just saying, do you have any personal goals about trying to be the best lock in the world or anything like that? I always had some of those kind of goals myself. It didn't obviously transpire for me, but as I always say, it's great to have that end goal or that goal at the top of the tree that's kind of aspirational. It doesn't have to be, doesn't always have to seem realistic. I feel like it actually is realistic for you. I don't mind saying that to you. And not to get a big head, I don't think you would ever, but like, have you anything like that written down? Have you anything that you say, do you know what, I'd love to be, say like Johnny Sexton now at the moment is in that top five, you know, rugby players in the world. You see Brody Retallick there. And now you know you played against him, that you can compete with him, and that you're definitely well able for it. Anything like that? Any personal stuff that you'd love to be kind of ticking off? Yeah,
you do. Yeah, well, of course, I'd love to be up there with the best in the world. I think most guys would, but I don't think of it like I want to be like this or that. I think of it like, you know, what does my game need to improve? You know, we talked about, you know, line out calling being, you know, one part that I'd like to bring on, and I think if you get all those little bits right, then all that will look after itself in a way. But yeah, definitely, it's, you know, I definitely want to get better, and I think I can be better too.
Well, we're delighted you've given us so much of your time. I just have one last question for you. It's such a spectacular year so far, and there's still some big matches, you said, left this year even. But if you had to pick one moment, if I had to make you choose out of all you've achieved this year, what's the one moment that sticks out the most?
It's a tough one. The one moment, I just can't pick between a few.
Too many.
Yeah, like.
Do you view it as a journey?
Is that
you're not thinking like a moment. I was a bit like that myself. I always actually felt they were kind of, it was weird. My career, I always felt like they were kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, when you have this massive big, you're chasing this goal all the time. It was kind of a bit like when you actually got it, it was a bit, I felt like, oh, what's the next thing? I didn't really, I can't think of it now. I'm losing my mind.
You're always thinking of the next thing, but
they're great moments, but kind of was like, what's I'm kind of next. Like the day after, I was like, I'm sweating out the booze, and I'm saying, like, what's the next thing I can do, you know?
Yeah, that's, I think you need to enjoy them, like those moments, you know? Mm. But like Bilbao was unbelievable.
Or the great folly at the final whistle of Bilbao shows how much it meant to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That was shaggy moment.
Yeah. That was class. And obviously Twickenham was unreal, and so was Saturday. So I don't think I could pick one, but I've been lucky enough to have had a few the last year now, in fairness.
And can I ask you, sorry, I know we're trying to wrap it up. We've kept you ages, and thanks a million for coming on and being so generous with your time. But just in terms of the year ahead, and I think we were, like Will was asking me before about, you know, getting ahead of ourselves. I think the expectations there, I think that the quality is there for us to deliver consistently, but I do think there's a next match kind of focus within the team. I think you could hear Cian Healy saying it last week as well. It's definitely the message. But do you feel like it's all within our grasp? You know, do you think that we could achieve those things, but that, you know, we can deliver the consistency, and we know we can do the once off, the big ones. What like, do you feel like it's all within our grasp if we perform to our potential that we can, you know, we could go on and win everything that's in front of us?
With Leicester or Ireland?
Both,
yeah. Consistency is definitely a big thing. We spoke about at Leinster for the past few months. You know, we saw some of the results we had last year in Bilbao, unbelievable. Then obviously winning the Pro 14. But then, you know, we had a lot of games where we kind of let ourselves down. Obviously, Connacht in the sports ground, went away to Ospreys. So consistency has been kind of an area for us this year. We've targeted, you know, it's easy to get yourself up for a game in the Aviva at Christmas, but, you know, being able to deliver that same performance, you know, in a Pro 14 game or whatever. So it's, we're definitely looking at being successful this year with Leinster again. And I think if we get our stuff right and, you know, we're on our game, you know, we're definitely up there. And I think the same would be true with Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Well, I can't wait. I can't wait to watch this year. I mean, it's just so exciting to see the team doing so well. James, thanks a million for coming in. For myself and Will and Gav over there as well. We really appreciate it. We're all just so excited for the year ahead. And best luck for the rest of the season. That is, you know, very, very exciting. Looking forward to watching you.
Thanks, lads. Cheers.
Thanks, James. That's all we have time for in this week's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back a little later this week with a bumper preview of the Ireland versus USA Eagles game. And me and Luke will be joined in studio by none other than USA head coach Gary Gold and USA attack coach Greg McWilliams, a former St. Michael's College head coach and a Dubliner to boot. So until next time, thank you so much for listening and goodbye.